notre quotidien. C'est sur Taïwan.
Society 13 and Progzilla Radio proudly present Frog Watch with your friend and host, Big Tony Rousek, a.k.a. Frog's Watch.
Lost in flight, demons of the night, looking for a kill, snatching life at will, never get their fill. Victims go insane, struggling in vain, pleasures in their pain, drinking to survive, watch your saviors die, making them feel alive. Can't get enough, starting to choke. Head rolling back, laugh at the moon. Head starts to swoon. Up in the air, head for the sky. to the pain, the tears, the longing to be free. You're waiting for us to be joined together forever, we do. I just can't let this be a life I leave to you, leave to you. The final choice is made, I know what I have to do. I'll soon be far from here, I'll leave this world to you. Going back to my world, the place of death and fear. Yours is the mortal will to me, now that is clear. Round and round, each night looking for my prey. Can't take the fire inside, there must be a better way. To turn and head for the east, for me it means more pain. The hunger for life and death without your love, it's in vain, it's in vain.
Welcome back to Prague Watch, my friends. Your humble host, Big Tony the Prague Squatch, here for another 90 minutes of progressive music for your listening pleasure. And how about that opening epic, Nosferatu Requiem for a Vampire, which came from the 1994 album Pictures from the Other Side by the band Cyan. A remastered version also appeared on the Cyan compilation album Remastered from 1997. Cyan, of course, featured the subject of today's program, Mr. Robert Reed, along with Christina Murphy, before she was Christina Booth, the vocalist for what is probably Rob's best-known band, Magenta. Well, I was lucky enough to talk with Rob about some of his rich musical history and the new Magenta album. This was a few weeks back, while he was putting the finishing touches on the album, which I believe has since been released. So we're going to hear a little of that conversation in just a while, and we'll also be hearing from the new Magenta album, and from a couple of Rob's other recent projects, Compendium and Kiama. Right now, let's listen to the epic closer from Magenta's last album, 2013's The 27 Club. The name of the song is The Devil at the Crossroads.
Thank you. broken hearts and souls to mend. As the music heals the land, the gift within my hand, pray for love.
Once again, that was The Devil at the Crossroads from the 27 Club, Magenta's 2013 release.
Hello, good morning, good evening. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Radio Progzilla, which is being dishing you up red-hot progressive stuff at 24/7.
Now let's hear a little of my conversation with the super talented UK multi-instrumentalist and composer, Rob Reed.
So do you prefer to be called Robert or Rob or?
Rob. Rob is fine, yeah.
Okay. You can call me Tony if you want to call me at all.
That's okay. All right, thanks.
Anyway, first let me say it's a pleasure to have you on my program. I've been a big fan for quite some time. I enjoy, you know, everything from Cyan through Compendium, Magenta. Kiama, is that how you guys say that, Kiama?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay,
yeah.
And your solo projects also, you certainly have made a lot of great music and worked with a lot of great people in your time.
I've been busy.
It seems like it. Absolutely. So right now you're currently putting the finishing touches on a new Magenta album, correct?
Yes, that's taking all my time at the moment. I seem to spend the whole of my life in the studio at the moment, mixing and putting the finishing touches. I'm in the sort of final stages of mix. Mm-hmm. It's all going to go to the pressing plant by the end of this week. So, I'm excited, but also I'll be glad to see the back of it, really, because it's so much work, and you get so involved with it, and it's hard to know when to say that it's done, really, you know.
Normally, I understand, yeah. I do a little bit of music on the side myself, nothing on the level of what you're doing, but, you know, so, yeah, I know, it's like you wonder, when are you overdoing it? Are you going to, like, polish it to death and take all the fun and spontaneity out of it, you know?
No, that is always a worry, and it's usually a self-imposed release date will stop you from going too far, because, you know, there's always something extra to be done, especially with modern technology. Mm-hmm. You know, you can work at it forever, really. And as you say, you can overcook it and ruin it. So, yeah, it's best to try and know when to leave it alone.
Yeah, cut it loose. You have to let the world hear it at some point.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's going to the CD production plant or whatever later this week?
Yeah.
So when is it due, and can you tell us a little bit about it? Is it a concept album like 27 Club or?
Well, the album's out on April the 20th. That's when it'll be available for everyone. And it's a little different, this album, in lots of ways. With Magenta, we've done, I guess, 7 albums now, I think it is. And after the last one, the 27 Club, I almost thought that I reached a point where I thought, you know, I've done it all with the band sort of thing, you know. And and I thought that was the 27 Club in particular was the best Magenta album, you know, as a blueprint of a band and what the band was all about. I thought that the 27 Club was that, really. And so it was always a bit difficult for me to get any enthusiasm to do another one, because I thought, well, whatever I do, you know, is it going to be as good as that? And if it's not going to be better, then there's no point in doing it. Mm-hmm. So it's been a excuse me. It's been a while to sort of finding the sort of spark, the musical spark, really, to find a new direction in the sort of sound and feel of the album. And I sort of, you know, over the last three, since the last album, which has been about 3 years, mm-hmm. I've been writing. I always write. I'm always like noodling and writing stuff. And finally, about a year and a half ago, I ended up with about 80 minutes worth of sort of rough sketches. And it was sort of, it had 2 feet, it was 2 lots of styles. One was a sort of classic Magenta sort of sound, which is all like Genesis and colorful early Genesis influences. And then this other stuff, which was a bit more darker. And we went into the studio to record, and I went and recorded all of this stuff, and I ended up with 2 lots of, and it kept on dividing itself into these 2 camps, and the sort of traditional Magenta stuff, sort of, that was okay, it was great songs there, but it didn't excite me as the darker stuff, and I ended up having sort of binning half of the album, and having to rewrite a lot of the darker stuff, and that's the direction the album's gone. And it's just a bit more punchy. And the other thing, when I sort of with each project, being it Kiama, Compendium, The Sanctuary, or Magenta, to give it its own sound, I always limit my sort of palette of instruments I use, especially keyboards. And on Magenta, it was always like piano, Moog, Mellotron, bass pedals, traditional prog sounds. And whenever I sort of reached for any of those sounds, I'd go, oh, I can't do that because it's not Magenta. So I always sort of limited myself so it would have a sound. But on this album, I just thought whatever I wanted to use, I would use. So a sort of lot more electronic instruments, you know, which I would never have dreamt of using on Magenta because I always thought Magenta was not about that. It's what we've got. I've gone in that direction. I've used a lot more electronic stuff, samples and sequences and, you know, the classic trademark Magenta is there. With Tina singing it, it's going to sound like Magenta. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had to find something different, something new to bring to the table. You know, otherwise, what was the point in doing it, really, if it was going to be another... Because it's so easy to do Magenta by numbers and just churn it out and, you know, and a lot of bands are guilty of that. You know, each album, they sound exactly the same.
Right.
And it's great for the fans, but it must bore the sort of writer and the artist, you know. I just feel I like to vary it, what I do as well, you know, hence the Compendium and the Sanctuary. They're all different, and
right.
Especially Dharma as well. That's like a rock band. You got Compendium, it's a lot more concept-based and Celtic. And then the solo albums are sort of a lot more Mike Oldfield inspired.
Right.
And, you know, I'm a producer in the end, you know, and I listen to all types of music, and I will steal from any type of music and throw it into the pot. If I like it, I'll take it, you know, and I'll use it. Do you know what I mean? If it's a style, and I like all types of music. You know, I listen to Genesis alongside I listen to ELO, ABBA, Bjork, Massive Attack, any band, anything that's got a good song. It's all about the melody, and, you know, and in the end, you know, with this album, I still, you know, the battle is writing the songs. The easy bit is producing it and all that kind of stuff. You've got to come up with the hooks and the melodies, and that's where I spend my life chasing, really, and I think they're still there on this new album, but it's definitely a different sound.
Well, good. That's great. I can't wait to hear it.
Let's take a little break from the chat and hear something from one of Rob's other recent projects, the band called Kiama. Kiama also features the talents of Andy Edwards of Frost and IQ, Luke Moshin of Machine and The Tangent, and Dylan Thompson of Shadow of the Sun and The Reasoning. From their excellent 2016 album, Sign of Four, that's the Roman numerals IV for the four. This is called Cold Black Heart.
Land. Howling out in a hurry.
Cold Black Heart from Rob Reed's band Kiama. Oh heck, I really like this album, Sign of Four. So let's do another. Here's Slime.
Turn it over.
Once again, that was Slime by Kiama from the great 2016 release Sign of Four.
I'm going to give the people what they want. Sensation, horror, shock. Send them out in the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is.
Hi, this is Peter Jones from Tiger Moth Tales, and you're listening to
Frogzilla Radio.
Ooh, my throat.
Now let's hear a little more of my conversation with Robert Reed.
Like you said, so many artists, well, I don't know if it seemed like maybe it was a function of the record companies at the time just wanted artists to put out another album that sounded just like the last one, especially if the last one was a hit. It's like, well, yeah, then you have to do Son of your last album.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I call it like the Aerosmith syndrome, because I did like Aerosmith in their earlier days, but I think later on they got into this like power ballad formula. Yeah. Making yeah. machine that just everything sounded the same after a while. I didn't know if that was, you know, the record company. You know, I know those A&R guys, they, you know, Aerosmith even, you know, they made a couple of videos where they were poking fun at that one A&R guy who worked for Geffen, I guess, at John Kalodner or whatever. And I guess somebody said that John Kalodner was the twitch in his eye, you know.
Well, I can imagine, you know, with, especially with record companies in those days, you know, I'd actually even suppose now, you know, I think, if you've got anyone funding you or backing you, they're going to have a say in it. And luckily, well, you know, I think all, you know, for the last 10 years, you know, everything I put out myself. I run my own label and it gives me control. It gives me utter control on it. For better or worse, I have the final say in it and I can do whatever I want, really. And there's never, you know, I'll play it to people. I'm not sort of as, I haven't got that big an ego that I won't listen to anyone. I'm always, I will listen to anyone's opinion on it. But in the end, you've got to have the final say, and you've got to do what you believe. You've got to believe in whatever you put out. So, mm-hmm. I can never compromise, and it can be quite painful sometimes not compromising, and I'm lucky in that respect. I think that that I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, I guess that's the upside of how music is done these days. The downside is there's not a whole lot of money in it, but now you don't have the record company telling you what to do, you know?
Well, there is that. But even at, the level of what I'm doing it, there are labels within the prog rock scene.
Mm-hmm.
There are sort of labels to go to that sort of do the old school, give you an advance and all that kind of stuff. But from my experience, you definitely won't earn any money, because there seems to be, how can I put it politely, the financial split is so in the wrong direction that it doesn't allow you to make money from it. And the only way I can afford to do music 24/7 is to have what I consider is the right slice of the pie, really, from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I see so many bands who sort of almost get caught up in this romantic idea of those days, the 70s and 80s, right, when they were record companies. They spent all their own money making an album, and then they'll go to one of these labels who'll say, yeah, we'll take it off you, and we'll give you 10%, of sales.
Mm-hmm.
And they take the 90% of the sales for doing nothing, really. Nothing that you can't do yourself these days. So, it's a tough one. But as I said, it is increasingly hard to make money at it. I'll give you that. It is, But I think we're fortunate within the rock, and in particular the sort of progressive rock scene, that the fans are one of the last sections of music that are prepared to actually pay for their music.
Yeah.
And I'm forever grateful, and they've got disposable income.
Yeah.
And they like the physical product, and they like the more extravagant product.
Absolutely.
So I'm forever grateful for that.
What happens when we all die off, though?
this is the problem, but there are people coming through, and
we are the dinosaurs, though. We are. It's
there are there are glimmers of hope. I do see there are younger people there. They're not in the numbers we'd like.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, this whole resurgence in vinyl and things, I don't know whether or not this is the same over with you, but over in
the UK, yeah,
there's definitely, and kids are loving all that. They're loving the romantic idea of owning the physical thing, I don't know whether or not it's a marketing ploy by the rec companies, are playing at these kids, but I just, there's such an experience that the people are missing out on, the whole MP3 Spotify thing.
Right.
I think it's horrendous. I detest Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
From a consumer point of view, it's brilliant. Well, I'll retract that, because it's not even from a consumer, because even from the listener, it's too much. There's too, you don't value it, and there's too much to take in.
You're right. People don't value it. I see that as a point, that it's just like data anymore. It's just, there's back in the days with an album, you brought home the album and say you had a gatefold cover and you could look at it. I didn't even like CDs. They'd give you the lyrics and, our eyes are getting older. You needed a magnifying glass to try to read it. Not on the old albums, it was big and it was something you could look at, and now it's like the album art, you get a little thumbnail, a JPEG, and, it's just, it's become like a commodity. Like it's not, I think in the old days you said it was a little bit romanticized, but it seemed like more of an art, like there was more involved, like even the album covers and everything. And now it's just like a commodity. I don't know.
Well, yeah, but I think it's, people don't value it. And as the whole Spotify thing and Apple Music and all this kind of stuff, it's like going into a sweet shop and saying, have whatever you want. And for the first 5-10 minutes, you're like, oh, this is brilliant. You're stuffing yourself. Mm-hmm. But then you get sick. You are physically sick, because there's so much, and you've had so much of it. You you don't savor that, you know, if you, if it's expensive and you got to pay for it, you own it and you listen to it.
Over and over.
yeah, you would. And I find that if you're giving it for free, like on Spotify, you're jumping in and out. There's so much of it. You think, oh, I got to have a bit of that. I got to have a bit of that. I got to have a bit of that. And you don't, if you pay 10 quid or $15, whatever, for an album, you will play it. You will sit there and you will play the whole thing. But if it's for free and you can dip in and out of stuff, you don't value it. And I think, you know, it's hard. And, you know, so you got that on one side. And then on the other side, you've got technology that allows anybody to make a record. So you've got this double whammy of you got it, everything's for free, plus there's loads of product being made as well. Mm. You know, everyone's making a record. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Even me.
You shouldn't be elite. I'm not saying that, but there's only, and as I've said, the sort of the amount of fans there are within the prog sort of circuit or whatever, that's shrinking. And then the amount of records being made is expanding, and it's like everyone's drowning in this in this thing, you know. And it's a real strange one at the moment. It's a strange place from an artist's point of view and from a consumer point of view. It must be hard for people who are trying to review this stuff because there's so many releases. You know, if you went back 10 years ago, even 10 years ago, there would only be like 20 or 30 releases a month.
Right.
If that, you know, of albums. No, there's hundreds.
Yeah, I relate to that. I mean, we get so much stuff, you know, and as DJs on, you know, Progzilla or whatever, you know, there's so much stuff coming out that I'm listening to it all the time and reviewing it and deciding what to play on my show. And then sometimes I realized I never listened to that really great album from a month ago that I really enjoyed. I only ever listened to it once because I have a barrage of new stuff that I'm trying to sort through so that I can present the good stuff to the audience, you know?
It's hard. And prog music, it needs 6, 7, 8 listens to get into it, especially, you know,
sometimes.
I think this new Magenta album of mine is going to take a few listens to get into. You know, it's a little bit demanding, and you know, one of the songs is 26 minutes, so you're going to have to play it a couple of times to know where you are in it, otherwise. So, you know, so I fear for the way that music is consumed and listened to, you know, and we're all the same. I'm guilty of it as well. You know, I listen to most music when I'm in the car. It's the only time I've got, you know, I can't remember the last time I actually sat down for an hour, put my headphones on, or did nothing else apart from listen to a whole album.
Right.
It's, you know, because it's the way that we live now, so... But I do miss that. You know, I listen, I think back to, you know, I used to sit there in the dark and listen to these albums, these amazing albums that people would make that were only 45, 50 minutes. And that's another thing with a new Magenta album. It's only 50 minutes long because, you know, it's so easy with compact disc, the format, and even worse with digital. You can make a record as long as you want, but... You know, I've been guilty. I've made an album which is like 78 to whatever minutes. It's too much, you know.
I think it is. When it first came out, the CD, you know, it seemed like there was this drive to give the people more for their money, you know, so they could justify charging the exorbitant rates they were charging for the CDs back then. Yeah. But, you know, then you'd get like the 75-minute album, but 25 minutes of it was kind of you know, it wasn't that great. I remember, I think it was Soundgarden, Super Unknown. I thought about 2/3 of that was awesome, but the other third, I just would skip over it, you know?
Well, that's it, you know, back in the day, because you could only get 45, 48 minutes on a vinyl, you had to put the best stuff on there. You know, the other stuff would be B-sides. And left off for good reason, but now, you know, you could chuck it all on. But so this album, say the new Magenta album, is 50. Well, it's less than that, it's 48 minutes. You know, it's got 3 tracks on it, and it's classic relayer, close to the edge kind of, you know, format. You know,
great. So. And now, without further ado, let's hear one from the brand new Magenta album. The album is called "We Are Legend," and the track I'm going to play is "Legend." We'll be right back.
it's over. The pain takes hold from young to old. Life fades when all hope has gone. Face death as we join as one. It's over.
Bodies roll on. searching in vain. Hear them cry, see their pain, their fear.
Legend by Magenta from their brand new album, We Are Legend. Now let's finish things up with a song from another great side project which Rob was involved in back in 2012. Rob played much of the music on the Compendium album, but he had a veritable who's who of guests, including Steve Balsamo and Christine Booth on vocals, and musical guests such as Nick Barrett, Steve Hackett, Francis Dunnery, John Mitchell, Nick Beggs, Gavin Harrison, Mel Collins. The list goes on and on. From the compendium album entitled Beneath the Waves, this is The Storm. Until next week, remember to prog on, brothers and sisters, and look for part two of my Rob Reed special coming somewhere down the road in a few weeks. I've got more material to play from Rob's Mike Oldfield-styled projects, and I have some more conversation with Rob. We had a very interesting conversation, in my opinion, and we'll be hearing more Magenta and from a band Rob was in called Chimpan A. But let's finish up here with, again, The Storm from Compendium, which was released in 2012. Prog on.
Fall and drown. On a rock she fell, the devil. the ball has gone to her grave. But on this here moonlit night, she sets sail once more to fly. All risen from beneath the
away.